So we are on page Chaf Hey, finishing up one point from last week that we hadn't completed. Just the very last point on Chaf Hey, if you're counting up from the bottom, it is 3, 6, 9, about 10 lines up from the bottom, by the big word Kasav. Page Chaf Hey. Okay, he's talking about, this is in the middle of a footnote, or at the end of a footnote, in which he's talking about conditions in which the creditor says, I want a condition, if I'm going to extend this loan, that there will be no sidur on behalf of the borrower. All the borrower's stuff is going to be open for collection. And we already said last time, in the first part of the footnote, that depending on how the condition is constructed, that may work. We compared it to a loan in which you declare that you don't want Shemitah to cancel the debt. And we said, if your condition is, I'm lending this on condition that Shemitah won't cancel the debt, that doesn't work. However, if it's on condition that you will not refuse to pay me because of Shemitah, that works, because you're acknowledging Shemitah does give him the right, and you're saying, I want you to forgive your right. The Hebrew is more elegant. The difference is between saying, Amanat shalot tishmiteni shvi'it, or Amanat shalot tashmiteni, or tishmiteni, maybe, bishvi'it. So it's a question of who is doing bishmita, who is nullifying the debt. Is it the shmita that's nullifying the debt, or is it the person who is taking advantage of his ability?
But if you're tar, you don't want to nullify the debt, not the borrower or the lender.
Yeah. So the system grants the borrower the right to say, my debt is void. And when the lender says, that's correct. The Torah gives the borrower the ability to do it. But the lender says, if you're going to act on that, then I'm not interested in extending the loan to you in the first place. He's not right for doing so. We don't like it when people do that, right? The Torah says explicitly, you should not be loath to lend when the Shemitah year is coming. Nonetheless, if he says that, if he says, look, you're going to have the right, Shemitah's going to cancel the debt. But if Shemitah's going to do it, then I'm going to be out my money. I'm not interested in that. So I want this to be on condition that you will pay me despite Shemitah. So that's a legitimate thing to do. And if a borrower says, look, I'm desperate, I need the loan, then that's a valid thing. Then we saw last time already. That's old news.
Most borrowers are in a
state of need.
They need the money. Yeah. They need it now.
Correct. Correct, which is why they'll go along with a term like that. Or in the case that we're dealing with over here, the lender says, I will lend to you on condition that Sidur will not protect your assets. So even though the law of Sidur says that I have to leave you with a year of clothing and a month of food and so on, I want to be able to collect those. So as long as he structures it, the Pesachei Choshen is saying, as long as he structures it in such a way that he's not denying Sidur exists, he's simply saying, and I want you to forgive your right to Sidur.
It's like you see somebody in the desert that didn't drink water for a couple of days. And you said to him, I'll give you this glass of water provided you give me your house.
Right, except that I think our case here is a little more benevolent than that. I think our case is a little more benevolent. Remember that the borrower needs money and the lender is providing him with a loan, and all he's saying is, I don't want you to have anything protected such that you can't use that to pay me back. It's harsh, but I wouldn't make it as harsh as the case that you're describing. I'm going to go a little further, though, because that's all last week. I want to go a little further, because we have a lot to cover this week. So, Kasav B'Shulchan Aruch Sham, again, we're in the Pesach Choshen on page Chaf Hey here. He says, Kasav B'Shulchan Aruch Sham, Sheba Mesha Kosev Shemeshabed Lo Kol Nechasav, Va'afilu Kosev Miglima De'al Kasfoi, Ein Bazel Levatel Din Sidur. He says, the Shulchan Aruch writes, that when he says, I am encumbering all my property, even if he says, all my property, including the shirt off my back, the coat off of my back, which is in fact Tuba language, right? If he writes that in a bill of debt, Ein Bazel Levatel Din Sidur, that will not cancel his right to Sidur. Shalohaya bedaito ela amash shavoy lo al pidin Torah, because he meant only that which is suitable for the malve, for the creditor to claim by Torah law. Ela imkain hizkir behedya tanai sidur, unless he explicitly said, I'm even forgiving my rights under sidur. In other words, what he's suggesting is, you know what this is like? I'm going to give you a completely separate analogy. Don't get thrown off, but I think it works. When you have a shul bulletin, and it lists the times for candlelighting for Shabbos, right? So if the shul bulletin says the latest time for candlelighting is 5 o'clock, when does that mean sunset is?
5:18.
5:18. Everybody understands that when it says latest, you know, when it says candlelighting time, it means 18 minutes before sunset, and there are situations in which you'll be able to use the 18 minutes in the event that you need to. That's a given. That's understood.
I think we might use 15.
Okay. I'm working with an assumption that we're dealing with 18 minutes. Not the point. Yeah. The point is this. When you get to the summer time of year, so many shuls begin printing in their bulletins the earliest time of lighting as well as the latest, because we're not supposed to light before the time called Plag HaMincha. It is 1 1/4 sha'od zmaniyot before Shkia. That's a long discussion, but basically this time of year it's about 90 minutes before sunset. And when you print an earliest time, and then you print a latest time, the question then becomes, what do you use as your latest time for lighting? So there's a temptation to say maybe the latest time for lighting should be sunset. Like actual sunset, and not the 18 minutes, because it's not the 18 minutes is not the latest time, it's just the time when you're supposed to light. But the latest time is actually sunset. But people assume automatically, when they see the word latest, the word latest time to light, they assume that means 18 minutes before sunset. If you were to print in the bulletin latest time and put in the time for sunset, you would cause people to violate Shabbos, because what they would do is they would assume that's like the normal candle lighting time, and therefore they would drive to shul after that, and they may even light after that. You would cause all sorts of problems. So what you do is something inaccurate. You write latest time, but what you really mean is 18 minutes before sunset, because that's protocol. Similarly here, when he makes a condition and he says, all of my stuff is available to you for collection, he doesn't mean including that which I should be able to keep under Sidur. That's a given that he gets to keep. He's saying, I'm going to give you from anything else that I have. Until he says explicitly, I am even giving you that which I have a right to keep, we assume that the Sidur stuff is not being forgiven. That's the point that the Shulchan Aruch makes. Okay.
I thought it was making a point that if I was a lender, I can't say, including your Sidur, it's the or requesting, I will include my Sidur.
Well, that's... I'm not sure that's true. I mean, in any case, I know what he means here, because I saw the Shulchan Aruch he was drawing it from. So that's not what he's suggesting here. But also, the creditor can write up whatever he wants, as long as the lender signs on the dotted line, so to speak, does an act of kinyan in front of the eidim, he's good to go. That's the condition is binding. So I don't think that's really the emphasis in terms of who initiates it. Samach Aleph, Sivkatan Samach Aleph was commenting on the second part of the note on top. So if you take a look on the top, at Chav Hei first, right? In the upper portion of the page. Chav Hei, again, the first half of that said, Hisnei Moshle Yisadru Lo Bechoz, that if the creditor made a condition that they should not be misader on behalf of the borrower, and the borrower agreed to the condition, Tzno Kayam. The condition is binding. V'im, now we're commenting on the second half. V'im Hisna Shalo Yigben Hikarka Omechevetzeh, the other way around. Let's say the creditor said, I am going to stipulate, in addition to your Sidur rights, I will not collect from this piece of land. I will not collect from that particular item. Yesh omrim she'eino mu'il. Some say that his stipulation is ineffective. In other words, a creditor automatically has the right to claim from everything, barring Sidur. And even if he stipulates and says, I won't collect from your heirloom vase, doesn't matter, he can still collect from the heirloom vase. Now, practical application of that would be the following case. And we mentioned this briefly last week, because we read through the Pesach Hoshen on the top of the page last week. But practical application would be the following. Chaim lends somebody money, and that person has an heirloom vase. And Chaim lends them the money and says, I am not going to collect from it. Chaim then, at some point later, sells the debt to somebody else. He says, you know what, this is taking too long, I want some cash right now. So he turns to Torchiner and says, Torchiner, listen, I have the ability to claim $1 million from somebody. Okay, I'm going to sell it to you for 900 or whatever it is, because I want money right now. Torchiner says, okay, so I buy the right to collect. At the time that he originated the loan, he exempted the guy's vaz. I am not bound by that at all. I am not bound by that condition, right, because it's not a binding condition.
What if you make somebody a loan and you have two houses, you give you a mortgage in one house?
Yeah.
Think that it entitles the good to collect on the other house?
So, as far as halacha is concerned, when you deal with lending, there is an automatic claim on all land that the person owns. There's an automatic lien on the person's property.
There are specific, what do you call it, details.
There
are specific things that this loan is secured by.
So when you stipulate this item is first for collection, that works. So in other words, you can say this house is security for the debt, and that's what I should collect from first, that's fine. That's what I'm telling you.
Oh, okay, I understand now. Even with mortgages here, if somebody lends you money and sells the house and he does not recover all his money,
then they'll take from something else. Correct. So take a look now, please, on your second sheet that I gave you. Not the Pesachoshen, but the side sheet. At Source Aleph, where the Maharit discusses this and explains that such a condition, in fact, does not work. He gives you the case. Source Aleph. Eshes Reuven Sha'amra L'Shimon Ha'argaz Hazeh Ha'chzireu Li Be'es She'et Be'enu. A woman is getting married to Reuven. Before she marries Reuven, she says to Shimon, listen, here is a box of stuff of mine. I want you to give it back to me when I claim it from you, right? Because she wants to, there's a word for it in English, but essentially she wants to safeguard her assets from her new husband.
Immunize,
okay. So she says, here it is, give back to me what I demanded from you. And in the event that you have some kind of commercial dealings with my husband, don't make this a security for any debt that you have to my husband. I don't want him coming to get this. V'kibel Shimon amanas kein. And Shimon, indeed, accepted those terms. And then what happened? The woman's husband came to... how does that work? It's the other way around. I mistranslated the second half of her claim. Her first half was, give this box back to me when I want it. The second half was to say, you know why? Because this is what happens when I prepare the source 2 weeks in advance. Restart on this case. What happens is, Reuven is already married to Eshes Reuven. They're already a married couple. She has a box of stuff. She goes to Shimon and says, give this back to me when I ask you for it. And in the event that you have some kind of commercial interaction with my husband, don't claim this as payment of the debt. I want you, if you lend my husband money, I don't want you to claim this box of stuff as payment of the debt. That's what she says to him.
He has to agree to it.
Yeah, he agreed. V'kibel Shimon amanas kein, and Shimon accepted that. Then what happened? Shimon, in fact, lent money to the husband of this woman, and the guy owed the money. And along comes Shimon, and he wants to take the box of stuff. So what is the law? He agreed to her stipulation that he should not collect this, and that we assume that when he extended the loan, it was with that understanding. Is he able to go back on his stipulation? That's the fundamental question that's put to the Maharit. This was a real-life case. This was not a hypothetical. I'm going to... I need to talk through the case itself. Maybe that'll make it more clear. If not, then come back to me with your question.
Yes, another question.
Even better then. Elu Shimon Zeh. His answer is this. Elu Shimon Zeh. Hayabam Machmas Tanas Shibud. We're still in Source Aleph. The Marit writes, if this fellow Shimon, who is the creditor, right, he lent money to Reuven. So if he came because of a claim of Shibud, I have an encumbrance on his property, Hayinu Omrim, Shem Silek Shibudo, Shuvenu Yachol Letovsam. So I would have said, if he removed his lien on the property, if he himself disqualified his lien, then he can't claim whatever it is, the stuff in the box. The Nechasim, all the words that I read in brackets are mine. Kigam, for example, Imhaya Habal Chov Misalek Shibud Chovo Me'al Karka Bayis Osadeh. Let's say I am somebody's creditor, and I went to the person to whom I lent money, and I said to him, I have a claim to your field, but I'm not interested in exercising it. I remove my claim to your field. I remove my claim to your house. Vishuv Machwa Halov Ala Acher. And then what happened? The borrower sold it to somebody else. The borrower sold the house. Eino Yachol Hamalva Letovso Min Halokeach Bechovo. So the creditor, I, am not able to now go take that field, take that house from the person who bought it as payment of the debt. I can't now welch on my forgiving of the lien. Mitam Shakadam Shibudo, arguing that my claim came before his. Why? Shere Silek Shibudo Hemena. Because the lender already removed his ability to claim it.
It's like a mortgage.
Aval, right. So far so good. Aval in lo mechara. However, if the borrower did not sell it off, okay, after the removal of the shibud, after removal of the lien, v'adayin hi birshus halove, and it is still in the domain of the borrower, v'higia zmano shel zeh, and then the time came for him to pay up, gova osa b'chovo, she'en givia mitam shibud, then he is able to claim it as payment of the debt, because your ability to claim is not a function of the encumbrance. What he's really saying, let me state this outside, and I think it'll be more clear. What he's saying is this. There are two different ways in which I can claim something as payment of a debt that's owed to me. One is sort of the normal route. The normal situation. I lend somebody money, he has to pay me back. If he doesn't, I can take it out of his property. That's not a lien. That's not an encumbrance. It's simply, you owe me money, and use your stuff to pay me. As opposed to a legal claim of shibud, this lien, or this encumbrance, which is going to be more powerful because it outlives the borrower. So in the case here that we're talking about, the borrower had an asset. He sold it off to somebody else. I, the lender, go to that other party and say to him, give it back to me. He says, what are you talking about? I paid good money for this field. I say, I'm sorry, but I had an outstanding claim. You should have done a title search. I had an outstanding claim on this land. If you want to get your money back, you can go to the guy who sold it to you. But that doesn't interest me. My ability to do that, to act beyond the borrower, is a function of the lien that I have. And in terms of what I choose to forgive...
One second.
100% sure I registered it in Basin. He was lazy. He didn't check. The point is that the claim that I have that I forgive is forgivable. I can forgive my lien. But that doesn't mean that I forgive my basic right to collect from the borrower. And all his assets are up for that. And there's nothing to forgive. When I say I am forgiving my lien, that doesn't mean I can't claim this item for payment of the debt. It means that I can't use the legal rights that come along with a lien, such as ability to get it from someone to whom he sold it. Yes?
But when the guy collected it from the woman, it was with the understanding...
We're not in the woman's case anymore. We have to go back to her. We're not on her case yet. We're dealing with his general theory first.
Well, I thought you're comparing that woman when she gave him that necklace to hold.
Right, I didn't get
the understanding that he wouldn't, if a husband wants it, he will give it to us.
Right. So I'm not ready for that just yet. So that's his statement. He says Ein Gevia Mitam Shibud, right? Claiming from somebody's property is not a function of an encumbrance. It's not a function of a lien. De'afilu, one, the next to last line in Source Aleph. De'afilu l'man de'amar shibud olav de'oraisa, givias chov mikro maleihu. He says, even if shibud, the lien that I have, is not a biblical right that I can claim from all of his assets for payment of the debt, I certainly do have the biblical right to claim his property directly for payment of the debt. It's a pasuk. V'isha asher atano shebo yotzi elecha es havot hachutza. The person who owes you the money will produce that which he is supposed to produce to pay it. V'afilu m'hisna b'feirish lo yigbenu klum yesh bidvarav mamash. Even if you made an explicit condition that you're not going to claim it, nonetheless, your statement of I want to take it, your claim on it is substantive. So now let's apply this idea of the Maharit back to the case that he was asked. The woman said to somebody, listen, here's this stuff of mine. When you lend my husband money, don't claim this. So what the Maharit is suggesting is that when he lends the money under those terms, what he has forfeited is the lien rights. What he's forfeited is the right to make a claim on the next person to hold whatever property we're talking about. However, that doesn't change his basic right to collect from the guy's assets.
But he should have told the woman that.
Maybe.
But he took it. He should have told her that under certain circumstances, my right, I retain my right.
Yeah, I hear that. Maybe. Assuming he even knew before this question came to the Maharit.
Well,
but yes.
Thing is that...
Yeah. No, that's true. I hear that point. It would have been honest. So now take a look back in the Pesachei Choshen at Sivkat and Samach Aleph. 8 lines up from the bottom, middle of the line. He refers you to what we just saw, Shut Maharit, Chelek Aleph, Simen Memhei, He'erich la'ochiach, She'ein T'nai Zem Mogil. So the Maharit went on at length, I didn't bring you the whole Maharit, but he went on at length to demonstrate that that condition does not work. She'eino yachol histalek el mishibud o mizchus sharoi lizgos. He can't remove himself from anything other than a lien, a right that he could claim. Avakan mikra malei v'ha'isha sheratano shebo. But here you have a pasuk that says he's got to pay up. Vilich ora. He then says lich ora maishna mikol t'nai sheba mamon. He says I don't understand the position of the Maharit. Why is this any different from any other condition that's made in a financial case? Meaning, you can make whatever conditions you want. He says, the Maharit is assuming that the only thing you're able to forgive is the ability to... the only thing that you're able to forgive is the ability to claim from a lien. You don't forgive the general right to collect. Why not? Why can't you say, I don't want to collect from this, I'm only going to collect from that? Why isn't this effective? He doesn't follow that distinction. The Esher, Shemarit lo kach kasav, ela benidon didei. So he says, the truth of the matter is, and this is what confused me when I started reading the Maharit, because I was remembering what the Pesachei Choshen said about it. He says, it could be the Maharit's answer was unique to the particular situation at hand. This is always a problem when you read tshuvos, when you read responsa. You have to know how much of this was meant for the particular case at hand and cannot necessarily be extrapolated to other circumstances. You won't even realize that the circumstances are different. So he says, what was the case there? Shehifkid etzlo chefzim almenas shim yechayevlo lo yispesein bechovo. He says, in that case, the borrower, right, in his case, the borrower's wife, but the borrower gave the lender stuff to watch on condition that if he, the borrower, owes money to the lender will not claim it. Ve'ein hatnai bishas ha'halva'a. That condition was not stated at the time of the loan. Ve'rak midin siluk kodim shatavo liyado hazchus. U'bezesfir le'shein hatnai mo'il. What this was not when you lend money, which is what it sounds like from the Maharit, when you lend money, then don't do this. don't take advantage of this. Rather, you already lent my husband money. Even though it's not the way it sounded in the Maharit. The way it sounded in the Maharit was, when you have commerce with my husband. Nonetheless, he says, the case that actually was there, the case that he was talking about, was a case in which the loan had already originated. And he already had the right. And what you're now talking about is declining that right, lesalik, to remove. So he says, that's the case. Ubezes your relation at tanai mo'il. And that's where he said the condition doesn't work. Avol tanai bish'as halva efshar shamo'il. But a condition that is made at the time of the loan, in a chanami, he says, yeah, that could work. Umikol mako mashma midvarav shamo'il hatnai shim yimkor akarka lo yuchal ligvos milakuchos. What he says does work is the condition will be effective to the extent that if the borrower were to sell off the land, then the malva, the lender, would not be able to collect from the purchasers. Because he's saying, shibud, you can get rid of. Just not the basic right to collect from that person's assets. So he says that part, the shibud, is gotten rid of, and therefore, if he sells it to somebody else, the lender will not be able to claim it. You follow? Yeah. Right. It's true that the Pisach Choshen, I think, is struggling. Because at the end of the day, I don't understand why you are able to forgive the encumbrance, the lien, and you're not able to forgive the natural right of collection, whether at the time of the loan or later. The only suggestion I could make, and this is a reach, so I stipulate that it's a reach at the start, is that the borrower has an obligation to pay back. And in the event that you come to make a condition after that, remember when we talked about the mitzvah of paying back the creditor. So one of the views, Rashi's view, of why there's a mitzvah to pay back the creditor is because you have to speak honestly. Right? So we said that if a person is going to... So in this case here, if a person at the time of the loan has a stipulation that you can't collect from here, so then when he agreed to pay back and not use this to pay it back, that was the original agreement. But if at the time of the loan this was up for collection, then he has already committed to use that to pay his debt. And even if you want to forgive that, he has a personal obligation to fulfill it. So maybe within Rashi's view of Priyas Baal Chob Mitzvah, that it's about keeping your original word, maybe. The problem is that the wording doesn't sound like that. It sounds more like what the legal ability of the lender to forgive something, not the obligation on the borrower to repay it. So I admit that that's weak. The only thing that supports me on it is the fact that he quotes the pasuk about the obligation of the borrower. Is an obligation on the borrower to pay, not a statement of the lender's ability to collect. So, I'm not sure. He then concludes with one more point. He says, we're one line up from the bottom in the Pisach Choshen. V'nira pashut, it appears obvious, sherashai hamalve bish'as givia levatera chepetz misuyam shelo lekachto. It appears obvious that the collector, the creditor, at the time of collection, is able to forgive his claim of a particular item and say, well, I'm not going to take that. You want to give me that to pay the debt, or you don't want to give me that to pay the debt, but you should, and I'm not interested in claiming it. V'kach kasev v'shochan aruch harav sov siv. Hey, v'shochan aruch harav, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, in fact, concluded, shesiyem, Elim Kane Mochelo Hamalva Miritsono Masha Mochel. He said what we said before, that forgiving the does not remove the encumbrance, but he added a clause saying, unless you want to forgive that which you have a right to. The lo hevanti lama hutzrach lichto mirov shituso. He concludes on page Chavav. He says, I didn't really understand why he had to write this since it's so obvious. That's what he says. Of course you can forgive. Okay. That concludes this this piece. Okay. The next piece here is one that you can see as you look at Chav Vav Chav Zayin, is very, very long in his commentary on it. And what I did instead with the sheet was bring you the key sources in his discussion. It is a fascinating piece, and we're just short of time to go through the entire thing. But this is his discussion of bankruptcy, secular bankruptcy, and how it works. So take a look at the top of the page, please, on page Chav Vav. He says, Afilu kishe'en lo achshav bameh lifroa. Even if somebody does not have the means of paying right now, eino niftar leolam milifroa hachov. He will never be exempt from paying off the debt. There is no concept in halacha of bankruptcy protection. We don't have it. We have all sorts of laws that favor borrowers, most obviously shmitah. But we don't have the concept of bankruptcy protection in which you can file your plan for how you're going to pay, who you're going to pay, when you're going to pay, and then the court says, okay, all other claims beyond that are void. And the court will act to stop people from collecting. That doesn't exist. Which leads to the question which he wants to address in footnote Samach Gimel, and you can see it starts on the second line on page Chavav, and it runs all the way down Chavav, and then if you flip to the second side, it runs as well about three quarters of the way down Chav Zayin. So, like I said, we're not going to look at it inside, although it's a great read. We're going to do what he does, but do it outside using the sources that I brought you here. And the question that he wants to address is, under what terms or by what right secular bankruptcy would be binding in halacha? Binding meaning to the extent that creditors now have to honor it and can't decide that they want to go collect. So there are three fundamental ways. And everything I'm about to say, or almost everything, is straight out of what he does. I'm just summarizing it. There are three fundamental ways in which bankruptcy might be valid in halacha. The first way it might be valid is as a pshara. It's as a compromise. It's a negotiated compromise between the sides. The lenders say, here are our claims. The borrower says, here's what I can do. And the lender agrees to the terms of the bankruptcy discharge. And we recommend pshara. We recommend compromise. But take a look at source base. Shulchan Aruch Chosh and Mishpat Yud Beis Zayin, the first line in source base, where we note an important point. Even if the litigants agree to a compromise in Beis Din, Yecholim Lachzor Bohem calls Manshalo Kanu Miyadam. They're able to back out until there's an act of kinyan. There has to be a formal, pick up the pen transaction in order to cement the kinyan, and otherwise they can walk away and say, actually, no, we want to litigate our full claim.
Would you be chayav at the what's it called, the Misha Parah?
So potentially yes, depending on what the circumstances were, that where you make a commitment to something and then you walk away, maybe. At least maybe Taromes, not Misha Parah. But that's one condition that's important to note. And then there's another condition that's important to note. What about the following case? The borrower goes to court, bankruptcy court, he files his plan, right? And the court accepts it. Agrees with it, right? There were 10 creditors. 9 of the creditors said, we're good with that. The 10th creditor is yelling and screaming, I'm not good with that. I want my full payment. So, as a matter of practice, he's going to lose. This bankruptcy proposal is going to become the plan going forward. He's not going to be able to do anything about it. That is not pshara. Pshara, compromise, by definition, is where the sides agree upon a deal. So take a look back in source Beis at the second line that I brought you from the Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat. He says, Im Reuven hithchid es Shimon lemosro la'anos im lo yite lo mamon shayudan en olav. This is not a bankruptcy case we're talking about, but it has application to it. Let's say Reuven intimidated Shimon. He said, Shimon, you owe me money. And in the event that you don't pay me my money, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to turn you over to the thug down the street. Right? Letter of the law. He has no claim on the item. But he says, look, your choice. Pay me or pay the man. But either way, you're going to end up losing. So, va'asuk shara. So based on that, they came to a compromise. They came to what they call, you know, an understanding. So if they then write up a pshara on that basis, bikinyan, with a kinyan, ubitul moda. Bitul moda is very important. Bitul moda means that at the time of the transaction, I openly declare that I have no objection to going ahead with this, and I say that if at any time in the past I told someone I didn't want to do this, I wrote up a document saying I didn't want to do this, it is void. It's a way of saying I'm committed to this going forward. I renounce any objection I ever filed for this. That's bitul moda. In a case like this, if a person did this with a kinyan and with a bitul moda, yachol achzor bo, he's still able to back out. Why? Because we know why he did it. He was forced to do it. It was either this guy or lose his knees. That's not a legitimate way of doing business. And so the argument goes that if you're going to tell me the reason why a bankruptcy proposal is accepted in halacha is because we call this pshara, my answer is it's not pshara. It's not a valid compromise if he was forced into it. He didn't have a choice. The judge said we're accepting this, and that's that. So that's not a good model for why this should be honored. A stronger model that's offered is the model of dina d'machusa dina. The law of the land is the law. Now, that's a better argument if you're dealing with a non-Jewish litigant or a corporation. It's harder to work with if you're dealing with you know, a Jew who lent money to a Jew. Nonetheless, we do have the principle of dina d'machusa dina. The law of the land is the law. There are all sorts of theories as to why the law of the land is given such status, right? The view that they are, the government owns the land, or the government is required to set up courts under halacha, and therefore we have to honor the courts that they set up. You can't tell me that they have a mitzvah to set up courts, and then we get to flout their courts, or social contract, but however you want to look at it, we say the law of the land is the law. The question is bankruptcy legislation within the scope of dina d'machusa, such that we have to honor it? What are the parameters for the types of laws that have to be honored? So Yosef Karo, the Beis Yosef, quotes the Maharik in Source Gimel. He also quotes others, but I'm leaving it with the Maharik. If you take a look at Source Gimel, Shayach lemeimer dina d'machusa dina. He says it's relevant to say dina d'machusa dina, the law of the land is the law, if, let's say, the government says this person's land is acquired via this kind of a deed. The Maharik's position is that dina d'malchusa dina will only apply for things like arnona, which is a head tax, or it'll apply to the laws that governments make, like the laws about who owns land and how land is to be transferred. But he says not matters that are between one person and another. It's obviously not so. He says because then you would get rid of like all the bavas. You're going to get rid of so much of halacha. He says that can't be. The position of the Maharik is only that which affects the monarchy itself. Dina de Malchusa, that which affects the monarch, is really what he's talking about. That's the position of the Maharik. The Beis Yosef also quotes another view, that it also applies to that which helps the population. He does have that other view as well. The Rama has an apparently broader view. If you take a look at Source Dalet, the Rama says, Lo amrinan dina d'malchusa ela b'davar sheyesh bo hana'a lemelech o shehu l'takanas b'nei ha-medina. He says you only say dina d'malchusa dina for that which is for the king's benefit or helps society. Avalo sheyidonu b'dinei ovdei kochavim, but not to make us now use secular law for our cases. Din kein ba'lu kol dina Yisrael, because again, you'll destroy Jewish law. So the Rama's point is, it's about what is for the benefit benefit of society. Now, there's a lot of discussion about bankruptcy legislation, and is it to the benefit of society? And there are two ways you can look at it. On the one hand, you can look at it and say, sure, it's for the benefit of society, because it gives hope to the borrower. It will encourage people that they can still go on, as opposed to just being mired in debt forever. It is another approach, as opposed to him becoming a criminal. It will encourage lenders to lend responsibly. Like, there are all sorts of reasons why it makes sense and helps. On the other hand, you can also make the argument that if large numbers of people file for bankruptcy, it's going to destroy your credit system in your country, because no one's going to be able to lend money, no one's going to want to lend money. So there's a balance here. But the argument could be made, this is for the benefit of society, and therefore it satisfies Rama. The Shach is very limited in Dina de Machusa. If you take a look at Source Hay, the Shach says, "Afil l'shar poskim disovrim d'amrina Dina de Machusa b'chol davar," even according to the broadest explanation of Dina de Machusa Dina, "Hainu davka ma she'eno neged din tarasenu ela she'eno mechorash etzlenu." He says, still, that's only if it's not against our Torah. It's just an area in which the Torah did not give a specific ruling. That's where we'll say it. But he says, God forbid to go against our Torah. We don't do that. So the Shach has a narrower view. In practice, there are multiple views, but Rav Moshe Feinstein follows the view of the Rama, and indeed says that bankruptcy legislation is acceptable under Dina de Machusa Dina, and that's the force behind the bankruptcy proposal. Chalkas Yaakov in Sor Zion disagrees. Pisre Choshen in this long footnote disagrees. The third view, which will be the last one that I'll mention because I'm running into David's time, is that it's Minhag Sochrim. The way it works, the way Dina de Machusa works, is because this is the way that business is run in this country, and it's understood this is the way you do business. In the same way that the Gemara of Mitzia points out in Source Ches, that whatever is local practice for employee hours, employee benefits, is what you go with by default. The Hakol Kemenag HaMedina, so too here, local courts, local policy can be that you lend money, you accept the bankruptcy system. And that is that's one argument, and Rabbi Akiva Eger says that's the argument that we work with. If you take a look at the last source on the page, he says, "B'tshuvos masas bin masas Moshe, simon samach beis," he's quoting the Maher Shach, "Hetik b'shem tshuvos Maher Shach, chelek beis, simon kufya gimel, v'bal chov she'eskimo lefasherim haloveh," a creditor had agreed to compromise, or creditors had agreed to compromise with a borrower, "ve'echareinu maskim imohem mikama anpe," and one of the lenders said, "I don't want this. No way." The roa ani lachofes hamemain lehispasher kishara zochrim shemarov. So his answer, the Marshach's answer, was, "I think you can compel him to compromise like the other people involved." Kiminaga zochrim lachofes sheino rotsa lavo b'pshara, because that's the way business is done. And so that argument is, the Minhag Sochrim argument is that bankruptcies are acceptable because of this is the way business is done, and that's the way that you accepted that by going into business here. The Pisrei Choshen is comfortable with that for sure regarding corporations, because corporations have rules and they're governed by secular law. Or if you're dealing with a non-Jewish litigant who expected that from the start, like that's what he thought he was doing with you. With a Jew, he's a little more hesitant. But those are the three theories for accepting and honoring a secular bankruptcy in halacha. And that concludes what we're going to do with this.